those who've never been here before, don't talk.
Well, thank you, Yossi, for your,
We all know that, we all know that the Torah is very sparse with words. The Torah is very careful as to how it uses words. To the degree that when one finds in the text of the Torah a letter which is seemingly superfluous, even just one letter from the alphabet, which seemingly is superfluous, Chazal go to great lengths to explain that the superfluous letter indicates a halacha or a number of halachas, and where the Torah adds in a word, Chazal go to town and describe at length the different halachas that can be learnt out from the seemingly superfluous word. Yet we find in this week's parsha, in Parshas Shemos, that the Torah seems to use an entire phrase which is totally superfluous and at first glance has no significance and has no meaning to it whatsoever. We find in the parsha that Moshe Hayaroye Esayn Yisroi, that Moshe was a shepherd and he was shepherding the tzayn of Yisroi Chaisnai, of Yisroi's father-in-law, who was the Kohen Midian. Vayinhag esatzayn acha hamidbo, and he led the tzayn way out into the midbar, into the desert. Vayovoi el har ha'elikim, and he reached a place which was har ha'elikim, Chayreva, which was in the direction of a place called Chayrev. Vayera malach Hashem elov, and an angel appeared to him, belabas eish, in a blaze of fire, mitecha snare, from this snare. Vayah, and he saw what he thought was a very strange phenomena. Vayar, he saw vehine hasne boyer ba'esh. As far as he could tell, the snare was burning. Vhasne einenu ukol. However, contrary to what is normally the nature of fire, that it consumes that which is on fire, in this situation, the snare was burning, but it looked as if nothing was happening to the snare. And then the Torah continues, and the Torah says the following. Vayomer Moshe. Moshe said, Asura no I'll turn around, or I'll change direction. Ve'era es hamare hagodel hazeh. And I'll look at this interesting or strange phenomena. Madua lo yivar hasneh. Why is the snare not burning? Now the pasuk doesn't say whom Moshe Rabbeinu was talking to. All that the pasuk says is Vayomer Moshe. Moshe said, Asurana, I will turn aside, I will turn around. Ve'eres amare agodlazeh, I'll go and have a look what's going on here. The Yalkut quotes a medrash that Moshe Rabbeinu was talking to the other shepherds who were with him. But that's not the Pshutish or Mikro. That's not the Pashtus in the Psukim. The Pashtus in the Psukim And this is the way that a lot of Mefarshim learn Pshat, unlike the Medrash, that Vayomer Moshe, when Moshe said, Asura no ve'era, I'll turn around and have a look, Moshe was talking to himself. Which is why, if you look in the translations of the Chumash, they don't translate Vayomer Moshe that Moshe said, but they translate Vayomer Moshe that Moshe thought to himself. Because unlike one or two individuals here in the yeshiva who spend most of the day walking around talking to themselves, most people don't talk to themselves. And talking to oneself is usually in the mind, that one thinks something. And when one thinks something, a way of describing that is talking to oneself. In which case the question immediately arises, what's the significance of this? There's a story going on here. And the point of the story is that there was a snare that was burning and the snare wasn't being consumed, and Moshe Rabbeinu saw this. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu decided to go across and have a look at it. But what is the significance of the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu said to himself, whoa, this is strange, let me go and have a look and see what's going on here. Were the Torah to be a novel, or were the Torah to be a piece of poetry, it would make sense that you want to fill in the background, and you want to make it sound nice, and you want to make it sound poetic. Right? So you say, you add in bits of information which are really totally unnecessary, but they make the story sound nicer. But here, why should the Torah turn around and the Torah should say what Moshe Rabbeinu was thinking to himself? What significance does it make? Yet, if you look at the immediately following pasuk, you see something which seems to be even stranger. Vayare le Hashem. God saw. Kisor lirois. That Moshe Rabbeinu had turned around to see what's going on with the snare. Vayikro elav elikim mitech hasneh vayomer Moshe vayomer hineini. And the Rebbeinu Shlom starts communicating with Moshe Rabbeinu. And the bottom line, the result, the end product of this communication is that Moshe Rabbeinu gets appointed to be the Manig of Klal Yisrael and the Goel Yisrael. And why was Moshe Rabbeinu chosen over anybody else to be the Goel Yisrael and to be the Manig of Klal Yisrael? The Pasuk tells us. The Pasuk gives us here the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu was unique, why Moshe Rabbeinu was different, why Moshe Rabbeinu was singular as opposed to anybody else, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu is the only individual that exists in the world at that point in time who's royal to be the Goel Yisrael, who's royal to be the Goel Rishon, who's royal to be the Manik of Klal Yisrael. And what is the singularity of Moshe Rabbeinu? What is the uniqueness of Moshe Rabbeinu? Says the Pasuk, the uniqueness is Vayar Hashem, because God saw Kisor Lirois. But he turned around to have a look. Since when does an inquisitive nature become a sign of leadership? The fact that he turned around to have a look, that's what makes him into a Manig Yisrael. What's the fact that he turned around got to do with becoming a Manig in Yisrael? And I think the answer to this question is very, very relevant, because it tells us something about ourselves. But in order to understand it, we have to go back a couple of parashas. So let's go back a couple of parashas to Parashas Vayigash. Parashas Vayigash sets a scene. What's the scene that's related to us at the onset of Parashas Vayigash? The scene that the Torah tells us, or describes to us at the onset, at the beginning of Parshas Vayigash, is the clash that takes place between Yehuda and Yosef. Parshas Vayigash starts off with Yehuda coming to Yosef, and Yehuda arguing with Yosef, or debating with Yosef. And there's a very interesting medrash on that very first pasuk in Parshas Vayigash. And the Medrash says the following. The Medrash says that when Yehuda started arguing with Yosef, all the other Shiftei Kor became terrified. And they were so scared that they didn't have the capacity and they didn't have the ability even to open their mouths. They were scared to say anything because they were, this is the expression that Chazal use, they were shivering with fear. Say Chazal, why were they shivering with fear? Because they said to themselves, Melochim medayonim elu im elu. There are two kings here who are arguing one with the other. Onu ma'ichpas lanu, who are we to interfere here? Who are we to get involved here? And the question begs itself. Even if we were to assume that Yosef and Yehuda were kings, why were the other Shiftei Kor getting so scared about the fact that they were kings? But they were kings, no big deal. They were kings, no? So in Mela they're getting scared. When you're talking about the Shiftei Kor here, you're talking about Madregas, v'chule, v'chule, v'chule. They're scared about a couple of kings. But more than that, since when were Yosef and Yehuda kings? Lichura, Yosef and Yehuda weren't kings at all. Yosef was never a king, he was a Mishnah Lamelech. And in fact, Paro, when he talks to Moshe Rabbeinu, says to him very clearly, you can run this country, right? You can be in charge of everything, but I'm the boss. I'm the Melech, says Paro to him. Yehuda was a king? Even if you're going to assume that Yehuda was a king, what a great kingdom he had, 11 people. Who was he a king over? Maximum he was a king over his brothers. Maximum he was the leader of the group. And even that he wasn't. Why? Because Chazal tell us that immediately following the Mechira of Yosef, the brothers got a guilty conscience and they blamed Yehuda for the fact that Yosef was sold, and therefore they deposed him from the leadership. So neither Yosef nor Yehuda were kings at that point in time. So what does the Medrash mean when the Medrash says that the brothers didn't want to interfere because Yosef and Yehuda were kings? What does that mean? Obviously, the pshat here doesn't mean a king in the sense or in the understanding or the way in which we understand what a king is. We understand a king is to be somebody who has a state, somebody who has a people who are under his power. He rules. How does he rule? He rules because he's got an army. He rules because he's got an entire bureaucracy that's at his disposal to drive people mad and to drive people crazy and to take away strollers and to do all sorts of things. He is a king because if you try to deny the fact that he is the king, you'll get your head chopped off, or you'll get electrocuted, or they'll inject you with something other than what makes life seemingly pleasant. And therefore, he's a king. In the eyes of the Torah, a melech doesn't mean that. In the eyes of the Torah, a melech is some type of spiritual description. It's a dagger ruchni. It's describing something. In the eyes of the Torah, a melech is the individual who has the ability to somehow raise himself up over and above his surroundings. A melech, in the eyes of the Torah, is somebody who has the character and the strength of character that he is not led, he's not guided, he's not controlled by the environment and by society around him, but adrabah, he is controlling, he is guiding, he is setting the example. That's the definition of a melech in the eyes of the Torah. And that perhaps is one of the most difficult, if not the most difficult, avodah that a person has in this world. Human psychology is such, the nature of the human being is such, that he is influenced by the environment and that he is influenced by the society around him. whatever is the accepted norm of the environment which surrounds the person will become the mode of behavior of the individual who exists within that environment and within that society. And it has absolutely nothing to do with the intellectual potential of the individual. It doesn't matter if you're a retard or if you're an Einstein. It makes absolutely no difference. The psychology of the human being, whoever he is, and whatever his intellectual capacity is that you can't free yourself from the opinions, from the hashkafas, which exist around you. And therefore, every single individual builds his outlook, the way he sees things, the way he understands things, on the basis of what's going on around him, what society is dictating, and what the environment is dictating. It's perhaps the most difficult avoda for an individual to find his own originality, his own independence in terms of his outlook, in terms of his perspective on things, without being totally ruled and controlled by the society and by what's going on around him. But in order that the individual should be able to get even to first base in being an individual, in being different, in being independent, and not being one of the sheep that follows what's going on around him, before you can rule over the environment and over society, you have to be able to rule. You have to be able to control yourself. And that is perhaps even more difficult. In order to be a melech over what's going on around you, you have to be a melech over yourself. Every individual, everybody, has certain characteristics, has certain strengths. And if one would try and define, as psychologists do, the psychological makeup of the individual, it involves tens of thousands of emotions and of character strengths which exist within him. And all these emotions and all these koichos which exist within him, and that's the way that they were created by the Ribono Shel Olam, they want to actualize something. They want to effect something. They want to do something. They want to fulfill the function for which they were created. And the avoda of the person is to be able to guide these emotions and these koichos that he has, and to use them, and to know how to use them in the right direction, and not to allow them to control him, but that he should control them. The Gemara says in the Dorim, in Daf Lamed Beis Amud Beis, that the Ribono Shel Olam changed the name of Avram to Avraham. He added the extra hay. The Gemara gives a very interesting insight into this. The Gemara says that the gematria of Avram is 243. The gematria of Avraham is 248. Says the Gemara, what was the difference between Avram and Avraham? Why did Ribono Shel Olam decide that at a certain point in time we'll change his name from Avram to Avraham? Says the Gemara, because Kol's money was Avram, he had control over himself. He did manage to be an independent thinker, but only to the degree of controlling 243 of his limbs. There were five of his limbs that he couldn't control. When he reached the point of controlling himself totally, all his 248 limbs were totally under his control, then already he's zeichet to be called Avraham, which is the gematria of 248. The Gemara says in Gittin and Daf Samach Beis, Rabbonon Ikru Malochim. A Talmud Chacham is called a Melech. Why? Because they are Giberim HaMoshlim Al Yitzrom. Because they are in control of themselves. The Medrash says that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel said that if you look at what happened to Yosef, you will see, says the Medrash, nothing extraordinary happened to Yosef. The fact that Yosef ended up with this tremendous covered that the Torah describes wasn't something, say, Chazal, which was a gift from heaven. This wasn't a reward. This was a self-producing result. Piv. He had a mouth. Shalei noshak ba'aveira. He could have done an aveira with Piv. But he was misgaber on himself. He controlled his Piv. And because he controlled his Piv, what was the result? Al Piv yishak kol dovo. When a person controls his Piv, that's Malchus. And a Melech, Al Piv yishak kol dovo. Everybody does what a Melech wants them to do. Gufoy, say Chazal. Shalei noga ba'aveira. He had a guf which didn't do an aveira. Therefore, vayil bash oisai big day sheish. Therefore, he wore big day melucha. Tzavoroi. Shalei hirkin aveira. Vayosim revid al tzavoroi. And Chazal continue, and Chazal go through this stage by stage, and Chazal say what? The parry didn't stam chapispilus from a 17-year-old kid who knew how to interpret a dream. Chazal say it was more than that. Because even if a 17-year-old kid knows how to interpret a dream, so you make him the major domo of interpreters in Egypt. Lord High and Mighty Chief Interpreter of the Egyptian Mason Movement. But you don't make him into a melech. So why should Pari suddenly get up and make him into a melech? Because Pari saw Malchus. Pari learnt the biography of Yosef. And Pari said, look at this guy. Here's a guy who's in total control over himself. If he's in total control over himself, he's the guy who knows how to control others. He's the guy who can have an impact on other people. Yosef had the middah of Malchus. Yehuda had the middah of Malchus. And that's what the other Shvatim saw. The other Shvatim saw not a melech. They saw a personality that's way beyond theirs. Something which they couldn't compete with. And therefore they said, this argument is between two people of a darga that we're not there. How does a person get this control over himself? It's very interesting when you think about it. If every individual sitting here in this room tries to be honest with themselves for about 4 minutes and thinks of that which he did from last Thursday night until tonight, just run through in your mind the pictures of what you did Don't share it with other people because it's X-rated, but run through your mind the pictures of every individual, what they did during the course of the last week. You find a very interesting outcome. The majority of actions that we do revolve around two things: spontaneous reaction, that's number one, and number two, actions which are not based in any way on thought, actions which are not based in any way on analyzing anything at all. Everything is by the way. Now, what do I mean by that? Think for a moment. We live in a life, the Israelis have a tremendous expression, im kvar az kvar. If so, already so. And that's the way that we live. Most of the sentences that we use when we try to explain to other people, where were you? I was already in there, so I did this. I was already there, so I did that. What do you mean you were already there, and therefore you did this? What's the already there got to do with the this? Is there any logical connection between the fact that you were there that you did this? No. But if I'm already there, I might as well do this. I had to go to town anyway, so if I stayed for 4 hours. What's the connection? I had to go anyway, right. I had to go because I had to go to place X. What I had to do in place X would have taken me 4 minutes. So why was I there 4 hours? Because I had to be there anyway, so I was there, so I stayed. You're looking for a guy. 6 hours you're looking for a guy, right? Eventually you think the only thing that could have happened to him is he got knocked down by a car, he's in the intensive care unit, who knows what's going on? And then he walks in with a Leivaria walk. Because nobody in Leivaria can walk straight. Have you noticed that? Nobody can walk straight. They walk like this. Right. He walks in and you say to him, where have you been? I've been looking for you for the last 6 hours. You'll never guess what happened to me. Well, what happened to you? I was in Gula. Why were you in Gula? I was in Gula because my 14th cousin, 3 times removed, brought me a package from my mother-in-law, even though I'm not married, second wife's, second husband's niece. And the messenger, of course, is a female, but that's besides the point. So I had to go to Gula to pick it up. So why did it take 6 hours? You'll never guess who I met in Gula. So if I met him already, so we're standing there and we're schmoozing. And you know who came over? So-and-so came over. You remember the guy? Yeah, the guy. You went to pick up a package. What is the fact that you went to pick up a package got to do with the fact that you met somebody else? Why is there a logical flow here? You went to Gula and you happened to see a friend. Fine. Hello. Goodbye. Why do we take it on as a given that it's a legitimate answer to say, I went to Gula and I met somebody there, so I got stuck there for 4 hours? Because our life revolves around Derech Agav. Everything we do is just Derech Agav. The rabbi gets annoyed. It's a classic, right? I watch this every time and I say to myself, yeah, here we go again. He calls over a guy, he sits there at the table and you can see he's hammering away at the guy. Now, I admit that Rabbi Lapkin sometimes gets carried away and Rabbi Lapkin can sometimes say strange things, but I think, having known him for longer than you guys, 99.9% of the time, when he says something, it makes sense. He usually talks sense. So if he's hammering away at a guy and he's giving teichacha for something, right? What is the 99.9% of reaction of the guys when he's finished? And I sit here and I watch and I say, okay, let's have a countdown. 30 seconds, 29 seconds, 28 seconds, 27 seconds, I know exactly what's going to happen. 6 seconds, 5 seconds, 4 seconds, 3 seconds, 2 seconds, 1 second. Rabbi Lapkin falls asleep on purpose and the guy storms out. Boo, 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 boo. Gets to outside the door, this yeshiva sucks. Boom, 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 boom. And he's out. Into town, and you know. And then 4.5 hours later, I wait by the door, the taxi rolls up, and they schlep him out. Where's the logical flow then? The guy said to go, the guy says something to you, okay, so sit down and think. If you think he's right, do something about it. If you think he's wrong, then work out why he's wrong, go back and do the same thing to him. Give him over the head for an hour and a half as to why he's wrong. No, there's no such thing. It's all spontaneous reaction. You say to a guy, when are you going to start learning? Rebbe, I'm learning 2 storim a day. He's there 25 minutes in the morning, 25 minutes. We're not going to go into that details. So he says to him, fine. So start learning 3 storim a day. I can't do that. You haven't yet even incorporated in your mind the sentence that was just been told to you. It is impossible, even if you are a quadruple Einstein, to absorb the sentence that was just told you in the amount of time when you spontaneously reacted. I can't do that. But that's the way we lead our lives. That's what we do the whole time. Rav Shalom Shvadron, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, has a son, Reb Yitzchok, Zal Gesundheit. Reb Yitzchok tells over the following story. Rebbe Elopian, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, when he was the Mashgiach in Zichron Yaakov, before Kfar Chassidim, when the yeshiva was still in Zichron Yaakov, had to have an eye operation. And they fixed the eye operation for 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And in order to get to the place where he had to have the operation at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he had to catch the bus at 2 o'clock. And he went with him. He, the Shiva, sent him to accompany Rebellion to take him to the operation. So he said they were waiting at the bus stop at 2 o'clock and the bus never came. And there's a queue of people waiting there. And everybody's standing in a line, and they're standing in a line, not facing the direction where the traffic is coming from, but facing the other direction. And everybody's very nervous. Is the bus coming or the bus not coming? Because it's late already. And everybody keeps on turning around to see whether the bus is coming or not. Is the bus on the horizon? Isn't the bus on the horizon? And you see this whole group of people, and the whole time they're going like this. And Rebellia's standing there and he's looking straight ahead in the opposite direction. And then Rebellia also got nervous. And for a second he turned around to look if the bus was coming. And then when he did that, he started shaking, says Reb Yitzchok. He started trembling. He started shaking. And he turned around and he said to Reb Yitzchok Shvadron, he said, in Yiddish, he said to him, "Wenn ich gelernt in Köln, wollte ich gekrogen a portia von Teichocha für Zazach." He said, when I learnt in Kelm, I would have got a huge portion of Teichacha for doing something like that. A wasted movement? Turning your head round for nothing? Is the bus going to come any faster because I turned my head round? The bus isn't going to become any faster because I turned my head round. And therefore turning my head round is a wasted movement. Nobody does anything without thinking, so why did I turn my head round? On that, I would have got Musa. A huge portion of Musa. If you look even in the Torah, Cain and Hevel, Cain, right, reaches a dagger, the Targum Yonasan Ben Uzziel says that he understood the concept of bringing a korban, and he brought a korban, right, he got to the spiritual madriga where he understood what korbanos were all about, and he brought a korban, and Hevel actually imitated him. And then the Ribbono Shel accepts the korban of Hevel, but doesn't accept the korban of Cain. So what does Cain do? He kills Hevel, and what does he do? Says the Targum Yonasan Ben Uzziel, he says, there's no God, there's no din, there's no dayan, there's no this world, there's no world to come. All of a sudden he's an atheist. Think for a moment. Your korban wasn't accepted, his korban was accepted. Maybe there was something wrong with your korban. No, it doesn't enter his mind at all. The world sucks. There's no God. Finished. The Megadif who cursed Moshe Rabbeinu. What happened? Says Rashi B'Shem Chazal. He came along and he said that he lived in the Machne of Dom. That's his place. They told him, you can't live here because your father wasn't Jewish. He goes to Din Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu. He loses. So what should be his reaction? Well, you think a bit about what Moshe Rabbeinu said. Hadron Moshe Rabbeinu, so what am I meant to do? I mean, I've got to live somewhere. If I don't belong to any Shevet, right? Nothing. He curses Moshe Rabbeinu out. And he storms out. And 6 hours later, they bring him back on a camel. Wasted away. Because that's the way that we react. The Ribbono Shel Olam looks at Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is looking at the snare. Moshe Rabbeinu is seeing the snare, and the snare is burning, and the snare is not getting consumed. And Moshe Rabbeinu says to himself, Asura Nova Era. Should I go back and have a look at this, or shouldn't I go back and have a look at this? There's a machlek between Rabbi Yechon and Reish Lakish in Chazar. Rabbi Yechon says it was 3 steps away to go back. Reish Lakish says he didn't have to go anywhere, he just had to turn his head around. But he's debating with himself. Is that a wasted movement, or is that not a wasted movement? Is that something which I should do, or is that something which I shouldn't do? And he decides, no. It's something that I should do. That's malchus. When a guy's got that type of control over himself, that he doesn't do anything at all without thinking first, should I do it or shouldn't I do it? And what's the repercussion of doing it? That's malchus. Says the Rebbe Shlomo, I need a manik for Klal Yisrael. I need a goyel. I've got him. Moshe Rabbeinu. Because he was Sor Lirois. Because he didn't turn his head even without thinking first what he's doing. He's ready to be a manik in Klal Yisrael. And I want to go even a stage further. I had a Miridika Maisa from Rav Yeager, Rav Tali Yeager, the Rosh Yeshiva of Shai Yoshev in Far Rockaway. And he told me the following story. He told me that many, many years ago, he was on a fundraising trip for 2 days to Miami. And he got to Miami in the afternoon, and he had to leave the following afternoon. And he had a meeting that evening. And he went to his meeting, and he came back from his meeting, and then he had to wait for his flight the morning the next day. So he thought to himself, if I'm in Miami already, maybe I'll go for a swim. Ah, you can't go for a swim in Miami. It's the chosar pi halacha to go for a swim in Miami. But v'advarim yiduim u'fosav min v'einim sichim la'aretz bohem. So he made a cheshbon the following, that he'll go at 5 o'clock in the morning. And 5 o'clock in the morning, there's not going to be anybody there on the beach anyway. He'll go at 5 in the morning. So he got up at 4:30, and at 5 in the morning, he went down to the beach. He says he comes down to a deserted beach. There's one guy standing on the beach. He has a look. The Chassidish guy standing there on the beach. He's walking up and down on the beach. Young guy. And then he has a look in the water. He says, and in the water, he sees a man, an old man, standing in the water. He goes down, and this guy comes over to him, and he says to him, Shalom Aleichem. And he says, I don't know whether it disturbs you or not, but I'm the gabba of the Bava Rebbe, Reb Shlomo, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and he happens to be here in the water. And he doesn't care if you're going to come in the water with him, I just want you to know. You know, he probably thought he was maybe going to the mikveh there or something. He says, no, you should know there's somebody else there in the water. So he says, fine. He gets into his swimming stuff, and he goes into the water. He sees Shlomo Bava standing there in the water. Shlomo Bava looks at him and he says to him, oh, Shalom Aleichem, who are you? So he introduces himself. He says, ah, and your father, and all that usual. And then Shlomo Bava says to him the following. He says, I don't want you to think I'm off my mind. He says, I want to tell you something. He says, I am here because I have a problem. I have a back problem. I went to see a specialist in New York, and the specialist said to me that one of the ways of solving this back problem is to do exercises in the water. He says, so I'm here in Miami, so I decided it's a good opportunity, I can catch your eye on both. So he says, if you see me doing funny things, he says, don't think that gun off my mind. He says, I'm simply doing these exercises. So Rabbi Yeager was trying to be polite, says to him, well, what sort of exercises do you have to do? So he explained to him where he had the problem in his back. And he said he basically has to move his head the whole time. So he was up to his neck in the water. And what he had to do was to nod and to wave his head in either direction. So he said, fine. So Rav Shlomo Bavitch said to him, you carry on doing what you want to do, and I'll carry on doing what I have to do. So he said, fine. So he started swimming there. He says, and then he says he noticed that Rav Shlomo Bavitch was standing there and he was doing these motions with his head, but he was mumbling to himself. So, oh, what's he mumbling about there? So he said, he got closer to hear and he heard him saying the following. Zog yot to the Eitzah Tov, zog nein to the Eitzah Hara. Zog yot, say yes to the Eitzah Tov, say no to the Eitzah Hara. So Rav Tali said to him, he said, have a look what's going on here. He said, he has to do this. He says, but it's a wasted action. So turn it into something useful. But Avoneseinu HaRabim, I was standing in the game room. Right? And I enjoy sometimes watching a group of animals running around after a bull, right? And, you know, having borrowed their wives' makeup and put it on the wrong place. It's quite interesting to watch. And especially the noises that they make. The noises that they make is very interesting. And when I retire, Mitzvah Hashem, I will write my 17th doctorate, because I have 16 other topics that I want to write a doctorate about why they have to make these strange noises. But it's all to do with animal behavior. It's a whole theory. But forget about that for the moment. And there's a guy standing there. And he's giving this long, detailed explanation as to why the retards are doing what they're actually doing. And the way he's describing, you'd think that every single retard who's on a soccer field is actually makes Einstein look as if he's backward. Because these guys are absolute total geniuses. Because if he moves here and he moves there and he does this and he flips over backwards and he breaks his left toe and he kicks the ball, then... And he's going on, and he's going on, and he's going on, and he's going on. And I'm saying to myself, you know what? When you think about it, if you took the same amount of koiches that it takes, time, effort, brain power, and reading, to understand, right, why the Schwarzer or the white Schwarzer, doesn't make a difference what color physically is, move from point A to point B, and you just tried using those koichas for two lines of Gemara, you'd be the next Rav Shimon Shkop. Take the same thing. Carry on doing it with the Schwarzers if you enjoy, right, watching inner city Schwarzers earning millions of dollars. If that's your pleasure in life, fine, go ahead and do it. But just take the same koichas and use it in two lines of Gemara. Yot to the Eitzah Hara, nein to the Eitzah Hara. That's all. Just take the same thing and use it for something else. But where does it come from? It comes from Chosam Achshav. It comes from the fact that we don't think. The whole of this week I've been doing this. I've been experimenting with this. From the beginning of the week, I've been saying things to guys. I just keep saying things and watching how they react. It's always the same thing. It's an instantaneous, stupid reaction. Without thinking first. You know, you say to a guy, okay, you know, you slept now. 72 hours non-stop. You have not moved off your bed. Right? Fine. We know where you're coming from. We know your mother stopped nursing you too early. We know all the stories. Right? We know all the traumas that you've been through. Fine. Right? We know you're in a deep depression. You're in a deeper depression. You're going to be in a deeper depression. Fine. We know everything. But maybe you try it and get up for 10 minutes and perhaps once daven shacharis before chatzos. Now you'd expect that a normal person would say to himself, you know what, let me think about it, I don't know. Or at least he'd go through the whole spiel again. You know, Rebbe, if you knew that my mother only nursed me till I was 16 and that's what's causing the problem, etc., etc., etc. At least that, you know, I'm even willing to listen to that garbage all over again. What do you get? You get what I call the Lev Aryeh roll. That's the spontaneous Lev Aryeh reaction. And you know, that's the answer. That's the answer to any question. If you notice that, any question. I'm standing in the dining room. The Bona Shalane. I'm standing in the dining room. There's a pan of French fries, right? Well, they aren't really, but they're called French fries in the language of the caterer, right? And I'm watching the reaction of how people are reacting. It's like unbelievable. There's not one person who goes to the pan who thinks before he goes to the pan, right? First of all, he doesn't think whether maybe there are other people around as well. So maybe there's a certain amount of cold cuts in this pan or a certain amount of French fries in this pan. And therefore, if I'm taking a portion, let's divide it between, let's say on average, there are 18 guys who arrive to eat lunch, right? There are 18, right, who make it for lunch. There's more who make it for supper. They're up already, but for lunch, there's 18 guys. So in your mind, there are two pans, so each one has to have 9. So what is like a 9th of this pan? Nobody. Boom. And then there's the guy who never heard of a fork. He never heard of it. Into the French fries. Do you think for a moment maybe somebody around doesn't like that and therefore won't eat lunch? And there's a guy sitting in the Bessemerich on a stender and he said, why didn't you eat lunch? And he's thinking, oh, what's going on there? You know? Forget it. AIDS is not my thing. What? Come on! Come on! Think before you do something. Just, you know, take 5 minutes to think. To use your brains. Or the people who waste your time. Time is money. Time is valuable. So don't waste my time. Don't come and tell me things which you know don't start and are not going to happen. And it's Narishkeit. Can I come to Shia? You're not going to come to Shia. You have no intention of coming to Shia. You don't get up to come to Shia. So what are we going to do in Shia today? You want to be a retard? Fine. But don't treat me like a retard. The famous Gemara. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachia had a Talmud. Who was the Talmud of Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachia? The Talmud of Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachia was somebody who created a religion afterwards. Otherwise known as Jesus, correct. Right? He was the Talmud of Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachia. The Gemara relates the following story. That they were in a eating place together. They were in a restaurant together. And there was a waitress. And she was serving them. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachia was impressed by her midas. He saw the midas of this girl, the way that she was serving them. So he turned around to his Talmud and he said to his Talmud, isn't it beautiful? And his Talmud looked at him and said, did you see her eyes? And Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachia threw him out, and that's how he eventually ended up founding religion, which gives a lot of hope for a lot of guys here. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz used to say the following. So he's a maneuver, right? He's a maneuver, right? Fine. You know, I'm telling you about the minutes of the girl, you're telling me about the looks of the girl, makes you a maneuver. Right? But for that, you go and throw him out and look at the repercussions and look what happens. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz says, no. He didn't throw him out because he was a maneuver. He threw him out because he said, you know what? He thinks I'm a maneuver. If I tell him, look how beautiful she is, and he says her eyes aren't nice, that means he thinks when I'm saying how beautiful she is, I'm talking about her looks. So he thinks I'm a maneuver. Out. No hope for you. If you think your Rebbe is a maneuver, there's no hope for you. You want to be a retard? Fine. But don't treat me like a retard. I'm a genius, not a retard. That's well known. And why do people do that? Because they don't think beforehand. Think for 5 minutes and you know jolly well you don't intend coming to Shia, you don't intend coming to Davening, you don't intend coming to the Chavrusa, and you don't know. So why are we playing these games with ourselves? And that's basically around what it revolves. It revolves around whether we act on the basis of thinking or we act on the basis of non-thinking. If we act on the basis of the thinking, then there's a future for us. Because, Mom, we're still in this mode of what I call Derech Agav. I was already in town, so I stayed there till 7. You were there at 12:15. Yeah, but I was already there. kol zman, when you react spontaneously, there's no hope. If we want to steig, if we want to get better, if we want to improve, if we want to raise ourselves up, if we want to become a shtikl malachim, then the yisayda dover is, and that's what Asurana tells us, is we have to think first.
Everybody.
Anybody here don't want to be here for Shabbos?
Not.
I will not be here for Shabbos.
Try to be here for Shabbos.
Anybody want to make challenge?
Yo, Yossi.
I will be here for Shabbos.
I'm going forward.
Two babies.